get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great.
Hello, BYWG Podcast Tribe. This is Dr. Noah. For the month of December, we are featuring an awesome book of the month written by a long-term friend, and the product of the month is a BYWG favorite, and one of my favorites, Dry Farm Wines. As a reminder, all the links to the book and the product of the month will be listed in the show notes in iTunes, in our weekly newsletter, and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Our book of the month is Hack Your Health Habits. Simple, action-driven, natural health solutions for people on the go by Dr. Natalie Beauchamp. Dr. Wanda Lee will be interviewing the author, Dr. Natalie, and it will be released in the month of December. The product of the month is Dry Farm Wines. Natural wines are all the rage, and in our estimation, this is the best of the best of the natural wine movement. The team at Dry Farm Wines curates the finest natural wines that are lab-tested and delivered to your door. No hangover, no headache, uninterrupted sleep, low alcohol, sugar carb-free, low sulfates, and mycotoxin-free. You can claim your penny bottle of wine using this link, www.dryfarmwines.com/B, Y, W, G. Remember, it will be in the show notes as well. You can listen to me interview Todd White from Dry Farm Wines in the podcast archives at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab, under Biohacking Healthy Wines and Microdosing Alcohol with Todd White. Enjoy the upcoming podcast. Hello and welcome back to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer and I'm your co-host. I've made no secrets over the past few years that the best health decision I made for myself has been yoga and my yoga practice. Several years ago, I walked into a 6 a.m. yoga class to find our guest today ready to teach and to freely share his yogic wisdom, insane yoga skills, and his thoughts on pain, which I still bust his chops on today. How are you, my friend Fernando?
What's going on, bud? I'm doing great.
Thanks for having me. Oh, it's my pleasure. Your story is incredible, and it's fascinating. It's book worthy, and I'm happy to present this forum for you today, for sure.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it.
So let me run through your bio, and then we'll get started. Okay. After a very debilitating car accident and subsequent surgeries, doctors said Fernando's active lifestyle was over, and he would need to adopt a new way of living, a way that required less physical activity. He believed then for a long time, but soon he began to understand that movement wasn't a decision my body makes. It was an absolute necessity and programmed in, much like breathing. Simply put, anything not moving is dying. So he chose life, and this eventually led him to yoga, and yoga told him a very different story. After losing his physical abilities, he developed a very different relationship with his body. It wasn't always rainbows and butterflies, I could assure you of that, but eventually he found a new level of respect and appreciation for his body's ability to overcome injury and heal itself, like we talk about in chiropractic all the time, the body's innate healing abilities. Once he marveled over all the miraculous ways in which nature has built in these superhuman abilities to heal itself, it changed his entire perspective on life. And what some would instantly see as an accident, like this as traumatic and torturing, which it was the best thing that ever happened to Fernando. So, Fernando, that's just touching the surface. I don't want you to leave any stone unturned. Go over your journey from when you were a young kid, athlete, living in northern New Jersey, your career, injuries, surgeries. Just go for it, man.
All right, man. Well, I guess you won't have to read the book because I'm just going to give you all the juicy details right now. I guess sort of a normal childhood lifestyle, I guess. I mean, my parents were immigrants, so they didn't speak English. So I grew up with Portuguese as my first language. Always kind of super active. I was your typical boy, I guess. Tried to play as many sports as possible. However, soccer was something that came, I guess, just natural to me in the DNA, but it was a sport I loved, and I played it year round, for as long as I can remember. I actually, my injuries come as a result of two, accidents. It wasn't just one. When I was a kid, roughly 13 years old, I got hit by a car. And that injury was one that we didn't know of at the time, but it had halted growth in my right femur. So from the time I was 13 to the time I was in my 20s, I had no idea, but my right leg was actually 2 inches shorter than my left leg because of that accident. And the progression is gradual. So it wasn't anything I noticed because the body had made all these very subtle adjustments to compensate for this, leg length discrepancy. But into my late 20s and early 30s, I was in another pretty serious accident. This time I was in the car driving. Long story short, once they started, taking pictures of the inside of my body, they noticed that there were some serious sort of malfunctions as far as they viewed it, because they were used to looking at a normal spine, a normal human being with normal length legs. But when they saw all these, issues, they began to correct them. Eventually I led to a fused spine and my lower L5-S1. I started having some hip surgeries because the pain wasn't going away. It was actually worsening. So I had some labral repairs in my right hip. And then they kind of exhausted all of their sort of ideas and kind of just left me to pain medication. They said, your body's been through a lot of trauma. You have to sort of slow down a little bit. Get better at tolerating the pain. These are going to help. And it was just a slew of different pain medications, everything from Percocet to morphine, Dilaudid, all kinds of stuff. And with that came a lot of less mobility. There was a lot of sitting around, a lot of moping, a lot of feeling bad for yourself, all that kind of stuff. But I was eventually led to a doctor, Rosbrook, in the Hospital of Special Surgery in New York, and they did a body scan, and they basically x-ray you from head to toe, and there are all these lines of symmetry moving through the skeletal system, and that's when he noticed this very severe leg length discrepancy. And it was a little bit over 2 inches, and at the time, there was this brand new surgery that they were using internally, instead of using the halo system with like pins and needles, they insert magnetic rods through the bone canal and can lengthen bone. So they cut my femur in half right above the knee, and they inserted a magnetic rod, and it worked much like almost like a shower curtain, as if you spin it, it gets longer. And so I was in the hospital for roughly 2 weeks, but once I was released, they sent me home with a suitcase with this really powerful magnet. It almost looked like a defibrillator, except both panels were together and you held them side by side. So it was like a circular defibrillator that you hold on to. And I would, rid my house of any metals, and I would lengthen my leg 3 times a day. I would place the magnet over this area on my just slightly above my knee, and I would do this for about 3 minutes 3 times a day, and I was getting a millimeter of lengthening, and I lengthened for about 6 months, and the rod stayed in my leg for about a year, and within a year the bone had fully grown in, fully fused itself, 2 brand new inches of femur bone, 4 times stronger than concrete, was just growing inside my body. And that wasn't, that wasn't a marvel of modern medicine. That was just human anatomy. The rod just held my bone together. But the bone and the growing and all that stuff is happening all on its own. So after that, that was kind of the eye opener of how miraculous the vehicle that I was operating is. And I think when people get down on themselves and people get like depressed or just kind of inefficient, it's because they've forgotten that they're driving a Ferrari. You know, it's tough to be depressed when you're cruising around in some awesome automobile. And that's what we're doing right now. And once I realized that everything that, that I was told became an absolute lie, it just felt like a lie. So I started seeking out different forms of movement, and one of which was yoga, which I had done and didn't really like. I was a corrections officer. I was in law enforcement for about 8 years at this point. I had been I worked with federal probation. I was a state corrections officer, and my form of working out had really focused around the gym and lifting heavy weights. And at the time, I think it was just more so because I needed to look a certain way. I needed to have a certain size, a certain build. It never really dawned on me that it wasn't that healthy. It was what we all did. And after that accident, lifting weights, the idea of lifting weights just stopped appealing to me. And literally I couldn't. I was so weak physically, but I was also in so much pain. So a lot of the things that made sense was just like getting down on the floor and just using what I had. And yoga just started, you know, blowing my mind. I couldn't believe how much better I felt after doing a few minutes of a few different poses. So I knew then that I had to kind of dive in deeper, and I went to Mexico to get certified. I took a training with one of the best institutions, rather. It's called Yandara. They have tons of different locations, but I spent, you know, roughly 18 days there. And when I came home, it was a new world I was living in. I never went back to the doctor, stopped taking pain medication, just really dove deeper into, you know, the body, the mind, and the sciences around it. And that kind of led me here and to you.
where did your mental fortitude come from? I mean, you could see how someone in your case could have so easily gotten addicted to opioids. Could have fell into a massive depression, totally given up on life. Because, I mean, spinal fusion, labral surgery, the leg surgery, I have very little words to describe that. And I've seen pictures. But where did that fortitude come from?
You know, Noah, I think we all have it. I think every single human being is born with this necessity to live and to stay alive. I think what ends up happening is as we live, we sort of stack a lot of stuff on top of that and we forget it exists. And it's going to sound really corny, but because I'm sort of ultra aware now of more of how the human body works, I'll say it starts as early as childhood. A lot about how the brain sort of remembers, how it stores memories, how it adapts, has a lot to do with how sort of organic it remains. And addiction is sort of pre-programmed very early on when we're consuming just sugary snacks. Like when I, as a parent, you know, I notice that my kid will literally just see a brand. I mean, he recognized brands before he understood, you know, concepts that human beings should just on a natural level know. Like he can see a McDonald's sign, or he can just recognize these powerful marketing tactics. And when we're that distracted, when it comes time to a place when we're feeling this emotion, this sadness, or whatever this is, we just want to go back to something we recognize, something comfortable, and it's a food or it's a drug. And addiction is all the same. It's a response. It's an automatic response to something. And it's almost a reflex. So I think because my parents were so foreign and really didn't, were just basically living in the United States as if they were still living back in, you know, Portugal, where there wasn't any of that stuff. I didn't know what a peanut butter and jelly sandwich was until I was like, you know, 11, 12 years old. We had no real snacks around the house. But I was also just always moving. I was always really active and I was super competitive. I think because, when my parents came to this country, I felt like a little bit of an outcast because as simple as it sounds, my name was super ethnic when I started going to school here in the States. A lot of people called me Frank instead of Fernando. And I always felt a little weirder than some of the other kids because my household, like my parents were so weird. So I was just really competitive at anything I did. I wanted to make sure that I was excelling at it. But I think it's a combination of all those things. And I think it's also the more severe the injury, the more benefit it has, like the more traumatic. So the way you kind of expand your capacity. I try to explain these things in math because sometimes it's easier to visualize a number scale. So if I draw a number line and I tell you that the worst thing that ever happened to me was only a 3, it was a -3. It wasn't that bad. Well, the only thing opposite that -3 is a +3, which means I'm only going to be as happy as a 3. But if something awful happens to you, something really traumatic, and that's a -10 is the worst thing that ever happened to you. Well, nothing moves in one direction. Everything expands outward. So the opposite of a -10 is now a +10. When I come out of this hole, when I come out of this injury, I've increased my capacity to be happy, to just be more open to more things. And I think every injury was just that, was me expanding and widening everything from mobility to compassion, to desire to learn, knowledge, all that kind of stuff. So it just opens your whole life up if you let it.
Yeah. All right. So, boy, do I have a lot of angles I want to go to. So let's, because the title of this actual podcast deals with pain, and I have a couple avenues I want to go to, let's get there first to cover that. You have a unique perspective on pain. Like I said, I think the first class I ever took with you, you went into your very common pain diet. I don't know what to call it, your pain diatribe. And do you care to elaborate on your perspective on pain? Because most people say, you know, if you're in pain, stop doing it.
Right.
Don't push forward. And you're not saying push forward in a negligent type of way, but you're saying use the pain, use your breath, work through it. It's got, pain has a much different meaning to you.
That you're 100% accurate in saying that. And I will talk about this by first saying that a lot of people will not subscribe to this. In fact, I teach a lot of yoga, but I also take a lot of yoga. And there are instructors who will say differently. And everyone's right and everyone's wrong all at the same time because our bodies are different. But what I understand and what I've been through, I think gives me another side of the story. And pain, much like if I left this country and went to Japan and tried to talk to somebody in English, they would not understand what I was saying. And pain is a form of communication that all of our bodies understand. It's the most elaborate, it's the most sort of impactful, but it's a language that we really need to understand. And because we say the word pain, it automatically has a negative context. If you hear the word pain, it's negative. It's not good. And we even call a certain type of pain soreness. We'll call it soreness because we know it's good. Because, oh, I worked out, I stressed my muscles, And this pain that I feel is good, so I call it soreness. So the problem begins with dialogue, and it begins with the words that you've chosen. But what pain is doing is that it's drawing your attention and it's drawing your focus. And even the idea of pain in your body and how your brain perceives it can be changed. Your body decides how painful something is. So your diet decides how painful something is. If you're an inflamed human being, if you have a very acidic pH, your pain sensors are not only heightened, but they are better at intensifying the pain. Something could hurt someone far more simply because of the food they ate that morning. So does that mean don't do it? Yeah, it means don't eat the food. It doesn't mean don't make the movement. Make the movement and make it with more awareness. Pain to me is pay attention more to maybe this joint or engage this muscle. When you're distracted, that's when something kind of shocks you with pain. But the pain is also an ability for the body to grow. You know, the body doesn't adapt unless it's first stressed. And you can say pain and stress are the same word. Again, you kind of just start, we human beings like to cut and label and put everything into a drawer. But the truth is, it's all kind of the same thing. And when you're allowing pain to do what it's supposed to do, which is to change your body, to actually give it another strength, you can't build a muscle unless you give it pain and stress. You can't build a callus on your hands unless you give them pain and stress. You can't, you know, come into a split unless you pain and stress the hip. So for me, because I was in pain for such a long time, I had to find a way to communicate with it. I had to find a different way of perceiving it. I had to begin to love it instead of hate it. Otherwise, my life would be a complete misery. And it was. There was a long time where you wanted nothing but to just crawl into a little ball and never come out. And I had people who would come visit me. And when they would come visit me, I would be an awful human being. I would just be a total dick. I don't know if this is PC or not, but you become sort of engulfed by it. And then there is a shift. There is a sort of this desire to want to stay alive, and the body, once the body starts changing its movements, then the mind starts to change its perception, and that's basically yoga.
Yes. So at the point you started yoga, what levels of pain were you in? Like, what kind of level of pain were you in at that point? To where yoga pretty, and I know you still have some pain, yep, and some adhesions, and I know you're still dealing with some stuff.
Yep.
At what point was, you know, how impactful or how did yoga change, really ultimately change how you looked at your body?
Well, right away, the pain, once the surgery, I mean, I was in pain before the surgeries, and so I did some physical therapy, but I was also, outside of physical therapy, I wasn't going to the gym to do like chest and back and buys and tries like I would normally do. So I didn't really know what to do with my body. And I just kind of would come onto the floor and literally just kind of try and draw my knees into my chest and find these little squeezes and rolls. And I think I saw some sort of online package that I bought. It was a yoga thing that came with a mat, two blocks, a strap, and a DVD. And I did this. I bought this DVD and I did this series, and it was so basic, so simple, but I fell in love with how I felt immediately after. It was like when I was in my when you're in pain and the pain in your mind is something that says, don't do anything. Just try not to move. So the pain is lessened. Just kind of stay in this little bubble. When I found myself in that space, I felt like helpless. I felt really weak. I just felt useless. And once I started moving a little bit of conscious movement, a little bit of breathing, you literally start to change. I mean, I can go on and on the science about what's happening, but when the body becomes a little bit more efficient and you give it more oxygen and you give it more attention, then the body allows you to feel better. And so once you feel better, again, your pain sensors are limited because you're in a better state of mind. And then the movement increases. And I just couldn't believe how much more I can do subtly. And then I had a desire to go to a class. And once I started going to classes, again, it's kind of like everything is like a ladder. It's like you step one foot on the DNA and then on the next one. It's just that little ladder. I met someone who deepened my practice, who I started having do one-on-one sessions with. And then, you know, that led me to go away and get certified. And then I don't even know where your first question was, but I'm going to stop there.
You know, I want to just echo with what you're saying in a small way, because three weeks ago today, I had a minor surgery, not a life-threatening surgery, but it's considered an extremely painful surgery, and it was. And I didn't take a yoga class for like 2 3/4 weeks. And Sunday I taught the anatomy portion of a yoga teacher training class. And before the class, I took just a 30 minute yoga class. And I swear to Christ that 10 minutes into this simple warm up routine, I could not believe how much I missed it and how much better I felt. I was astounded after the 30 minutes. And, you know, I'm a 3-4 year practicing yogi now, and it was probably the best I've ever felt after a yoga class, because I hadn't done it. I was out of routine. I wasn't moving my body. And it wasn't some sort of massively elaborate class either. It was just matching my breath with my movement, you know, some things I haven't done. And it was astounding. I was blown away.
I mean, it works, man. It works when you work it. It really is.
Now,
go ahead.
I was there. What are you going to say? No, you can go.
A friend of mine was literally last night asking me a very similar question about like yoga and why it's so like trendy now and all these kinds of things. And he's very techie. And I think a lot of people these days are very analytical, you know, computers and digital, and we analyze and we calculate and we try and figure things out. And so when you talk about things like, you know, emotions are in your hips and your shoulders, it sounds crazy. It sounds ridiculous. So what I explained to him is, I said, when you open your phone and you click on an app, and then that app opens and it's got all these other things that you can click on now, that program has been designed. It's been coded. There is a series of steps that leads to this programming. Well, the same thing happens in your body. There is a series of codes in your body. There's a series of programming, essentially. And the way you code an app, you press keys. But the way you code a human being is to have them move. You have them move certain ways, and those movements create a chemistry, a specific chemistry that's going to either tell you that you feel good, or it's going to tell you that you feel awful. When you're scared, you curl up into a little ball. That's the coding, right? When you're happy and confident, you stand like Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. Those postures are there for superhumans, because that's part of, you know, how the body should operate. And in those stances, we call them asana. Yeah.
Right. Like super, what is it called? Super, like the Superwoman pose, or I forget her name. But so you're definitely on my yoga Jedi Council. You're on my you're on my big Jedi Council, but you're also on my yoga council as well. And in one of our privates recently, and you were working me hard, and I said, I can't. I basically said, well, two words or three words. I said, I can't. And you quickly said, that's a bad word in our house. And, you know, you have a son, like you mentioned.
Yep.
What are some phrases or vocabulary that you're really careful not to use?
Super simple. I just try three words I try not to use, and that's can't. That's the big one. And my son already knows, and at four, he was like, knows not to use it. So it's can't, it's never, and impossible. I think most people don't realize how impactful their word is, or the words that they've chosen, or the dialogue they choose to use on a regular basis. I think once you start sort of understanding that, and sometimes you have to sort of visualize it. And I say this to my kid because the best way to describe it, I say, there's a little guy in you that's bad. And then there's another little guy in you that's really good. And every day you're deciding back and forth which one of those guys is going to pop out. And all of those guys are listening to words and cues, and they're deciding based on what you tell it. So if you say, I can't, then your body can't. It literally can't, because you've programmed it. You've set the limitation. And when you use your words to set yourself for limitations, then you're closing off the world. And it's supposed to be an open forum all the time. It's an open network. You know, all of the energy is supposed to be spewing in and out. And I don't want anything to limit me. So the word impossible is absurd. Literally, we're discovering every day something new. Facts are being changed. We used to think the earth was flat. You know, there, and some people still do, but that's a whole nother book. But yeah, I just try not to use those three. I think it's super helpful. Even if you consciously remember that once you used it, to like go back and say, oh, you know what? I retract that. So you're giving yourself another option.
I have another word that I'd like your thoughts on. When I say the word detachment.
Detachment. So, I mean, that's basically what we're all sort of trying to do. For me, the biggest sort of thing that we sort of have to detach from is just kind of wanting things. It's a weird thing. It's the things that we don't have, we want, and the things that we have, we don't want, we're trying to get rid of. So I think kind of letting go of everything. I mean, it sounds absurd, but if breathing means letting go, then that means that you're becoming more effective. And I again try and use examples that sort of the analytical brain can understand. And I go back to technology. If I gave you an iPhone the day you were born, and that iPhone you used every single day to collect all of the conversations you had, the text messages, the photos, the videos. If you just kept storing all that stuff, your iPhone would stop working. Processing would be completely damaged. It would be super slow because you're just wearing it out. You have to delete. You have to clear the file. So the human body, both physically and emotionally, needs to clear files in order to efficiently operate. And so just detach of the good and the bad. Just let go so that every new experience can be really, really and truly experienced. And then you'll know whether or not you're even happy or sad about it. So I think that's just it. Let go, detach.
You can detach from your pain as well.
The really awesome thing is that I'm learning every day. I have been recently following, well, I've been following for years, but I recently took a workshop in Brooklyn from a gentleman called Wim Hof, who's the Iceman. You know, some of his techniques may sound totally crazy, but now science is catching up, and pain, literally, the way that pain works and how sensitive to your own body, it depends a lot of on your pH. And so the level of acidity or alkalinity in your body will change how pain is perceived. And a lot of people, you know, hear acidity and alkalinity, but what they don't hear is voltage and electricity. And acidity just means, you know, low voltage. Alkalinity just means high voltage. And it's hard for anything to live, diseases, viruses, cancers, in an environment that has a lot of electricity. So imagine your body as just zapping everything because it's so electrical. The way you breathe, the way you change, the way you sort of eliminate a lot of carbon can alkalize your body and can allow you to be more sort of sustainable to pain. And it's amazing, not just what you can do with your focus and your breathing, how much you can tolerate, but the act in and of itself of tolerating the cold is so beneficial to the body, to the nervous system, to the capillaries and the blood vessels, all these kinds of things that are happening. But you have to go through the actual sort of pain. And that's the conversation that people are kind of scared to have, or instructors are scared to have, is because, you know, there's a liability, there's an insurance, and you don't want people getting hurt in your class. But the truth of the matter is, if you want anyone to grow, then there is an element of pain. If you just choose to use a different word, it might alleviate that sort of hurdle altogether. But it's going to hurt. And when I say hurt, I say it gets my attention, and pain gets your attention. And that's what your body wants. We don't pay attention to ourselves enough. And that's why we're upset with ourselves, because, you know, we don't love or care for our physical bodies enough. And I think that's kind of what I hope to relay.
Great. Now, I don't know, like 9 months ago or so, I interviewed Dean Pullman. And it's a great interview, and he's the kind of creator of Man Flow Yoga. And he looks at yoga really, and he separates it out. He basically looks at yoga for fitness, not only for men, even though it's called Man Flow Yoga. I like all the components of yoga, the spiritual, physical, emotional, the whole thing. But he looks at it as fitness. Now, you know, yoga for strength, yoga for men, what are you seeing? What are the trends, and what are your thoughts there?
Honestly, Noah, I mean, there is so much happening with yoga, and there are so many different things. And I mean, people are bringing goats into yoga, and cats, yep, and wine and whiskey and whatever. And truthfully, anyone that's bringing attention to getting someone to move is a positive thing in my mind. I think for me, it's hard to separate anything. I think yoga is fitness. I think it is for men. It's for women. It's for everybody. I think the components, if people want to leave certain things out, sometimes it's marketing. Sometimes leaving things out is so that you don't sort of confuse people or mix things in. People hate hearing the words religion or spirituality sometimes, and so you don't want to bring those in. I tend to use science more than I even use some like philosophical sort of wisdom. I think science is helping prove a lot of the things that we sort of thought was mystical or too esocentric. But I think yoga in and of itself is everything. Everything wants to stay alive. In order to stay alive, you need to move. So movement is crucial, and you're human beings. So obviously oxygen is vital. So anything that focuses on breathing and moving are aces in my book.
That's a really Some may say that's a very politically correct answer, but I believe that you believe that. So I don't think it's so politically correct for you.
That's a great, great response. I appreciate that one.
I have a few, just a few last simple questions. The first one is from waking to sleeping, do you have like a daily rhythm or routine?
I would say that it can vary, especially as I kind of continue my sort of journey as a student. I pick up, you know, new things, but for the most part, my morning is pretty straightforward. I try and have a tall glass of like room temperature water, maybe some lemon in it typically, and I don't eat. I start to move. I'll do some sort of series, and it could be 5-10 minutes. It's always some sort of variant of sort of like a kneeling sequence to a standing sequence. And then I walk to my kitchen and start making my kid breakfast. I get him ready for school. Once I drop him off at school, I'll come back home and either make something like a shake or a smoothie or some oatmeal. And then I get behind my computer for a little while. And then I do, because I work from home for the most part, I'll do movements throughout the day. So I guess I'm lucky and fortunate in that way that I can sort of, you know, walk away from the computer for 15-20 minutes and literally do a mini series. But I've found that throughout my day, I have to be doing this. If I'm working an event, if I'm standing, if whatever, even if I squat for 30 seconds in the middle of the day, my body has told me that it needs to move. And so I still have hardware in my back and my hip and all that kind of stuff. And most people see my, you know, my Instagram or whatever, and they see me doing things. And the truth of the matter is I can't do any of those things unless my body is really warm. When I get out of bed, I kind of feel like a 70-year-old man. I don't start to feel really limber until I start to move. So I'm very conscious of any sort of stagnant portions in my day, and I break them up. So that's key. I don't eat a lot. I'm kind of like a bird. I graze here and there. That's probably not the best way to do it. But I am in the height of my busy season, so the last few months are kind of just eating smaller meals. And I try and get, like, you know, a decent amount of sleep. For me, if I sleep too much, again, it's more stagnant, so I feel sort of less agile. So for me, between, you know, 5 to 7 hours is ideal. Anything more or less seems to be ineffective.
Any evening rhythms?
I try and get my kid to bed between 8:30 and 9, and pretty much right after he goes down, I'll put on some random TV shows or whatever I'm sort of watching, and I'll work out from the floor. So I'll mostly do everything supine, so I'll be laying on my back. It just allows me to sort of change gravity and posture and do a lot of things laying down, because core is, you know me, core is super, super essential. So I do a lot of core activity at night, just laying on my back watching the TV.
And two more questions. One, how can people get in touch with you?
Great question. I guess you could shoot me an email. It's skyhiyoga, skyhiyoga@gmail.com, or I guess Instagram. I'm fernrabbit22. Any sort of questions or anything like that, you can just send to either one of those.
Final question or request from me. Can you please finish this interview with the three phrases you finish your yoga class with?
Oh, you mean
just for today?
Oh, it's five. It's five. Yeah,
I'm
that's
sorry. Just
yeah.
for today. Go.
Yeah, this is a great sort of Reiki saying. So it's five things to kind of focus on through the day, and it's just for today. I will not anger. Just for today, I will not worry. Just for today, I will be grateful. Just for today, I will be honest. And just for today, I will show love and respect to all beings.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it, Fernando.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me, pal.
My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer, your co-host, and you are listening to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. If you like what you've heard today, please share this with your friends and encourage them to subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe to our incredible weekly email at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com. Thank you. And as my oldest son, Hayden, says, be awesome and never unawesome.